Analysis: Israel backs Reza Pahlavi to rule Iran. That's a dangerous gamble. Netanyahu, with on-off support from Trump, is now explicitly pushing for regime change in Iran, and his government has fixated on the controversial, though galvanizing, son of the last Shah as their post-Islamic Republic contender. Just don't mention his father's brutality. By Delia Shendlin. During the first ever direct Israel-Iran war last June, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wanted more than a military victory. He hinted and hoped for the end of the Iranian regime. Now the collapse of the regime in Tehran is his explicit wish, one that US President Donald Trump sometimes seems to share. But just what does Netanyahu or Trump think lies at the end of the dark, oppressive tunnel of the Islamic Revolution? Asked in June about a popular uprising, Iranian analysts predicted the regime's bloody response with dark accuracy, and noted that there was little to no structured opposition in waiting in the case of a regime collapse. If the necessary level of organization to get this done is 100, they're not even at 5. The US-based Iran expert and author Rash Zizi told Haaretz during that war. So what exactly does Israel hope to achieve politically, as opposed to the fairly clear military goals of a potential fresh war, if the regime falls? If Trump goes beyond limited strikes to full regime decapitation, what kind of Iran could emerge, and what would it mean for Israel? Iran's troubled past and unknown future. Of course, the real answer is that no one knows. After Iranians have rebelled and died by the thousands for their freedom starting in January, in the current wave of protests, the Iranian opposition is profoundly, sometimes bitterly divided, between those in Iran and the diaspora, diverse ethnic groups, and by political vision. Diaspora opposition members publicly feud in personal, conspiratorial tones, wrote analysts in Foreign Affairs. Hawks, for example, routinely accuse expatriates who are opposed to attacking the country of being agents of the regime. The Doves, meanwhile, often allege that hawks are warmongers. In my observation, it is often those Doves who are most committed to democratic principles, and their voices are often those getting drowned out. But if there is a war, and if that war topples the regime, for many Israelis, there's a clear preference for the return to Iran of Reza Pahlavi, son of the last Shah, and the only prominent figure who seems to symbolize a post-revolution future. Pahlavi has emerged as both a galvanizing and controversial figure all at once, both inside and outside of Iran. Many rally for him, while others fear what he represents. Some Israelis have joined the monarchist camp. Javid Shah, long live the Shah, Reza Pahlavi, king of Iran. These slogans emblazoned large signs and flags at a demonstration of Israelis on Tel Aviv's promenade, close to the U.S. Embassy branch, in mid-February. Brave people of Iran, Israel stands with you until freedom. Read another sign in English and in Persian, under images of the Israeli flag and the now ubiquitous lion and sun-adorned flag of the pre-revolution Iran, often associated with a former monarchy. It's not just the small cluster of Israelis on the beach. A Likud minister in the Netanyahu government, Hila Gamliel, hosted Pahlavi in a visit to Israel in mid-2023, when the latter even met Netanyahu. More recently, Gamliel gushed over Pahlavi in an interview to the Jerusalem Post. The resulting article displayed a rare but prominent use of his middle name, and probably not coincidentally, Cyrus. Hebrew Wikipedia does the same. Cyrus is the legendary 6th century BCE Persian monarch beloved by Jews, hailed in the Bible for having permitted the Jews in Babylonian exile to return to Judah and begin rebuilding the temple. Presumably the post hoped boost Pahlavi's philo-Semitic, pro-Israel image by association. More mutual gushing occurred between Amichai Chikli, Israel's diaspora affairs minister, when the two met in the U.S. in mid-2024. Pahlavi himself has spoken of a future Cyrus Accords one day, imagining a Persian version of the Abraham Accords. It's not surprising that modern Israeli political leaders view Reza with favor. In his excellent 2013 documentary film Before the Revolution, the director Dan Shatter chronicles the late golden years of the quiet cooperation between Israel and Iran under the Shah, Reza's father, via his parents who took the family to live there during a time of Israeli paradise in Iran, as per the film's synopsis. There was a Hebrew language school in the capital for Israeli children, while El Al operated regular flights between Tel Aviv and Tehran. But some in the Iranian opposition, especially those who prioritize democracy, have very different associations with the last Shah. It won't help anyone to envision some inevitably rosy revived monarchy in the future, as if there was no history to his family's rule. The 1979 Islamic Revolution didn't spring into being out of nowhere, it rode in on a wave of revulsion and misery after decades of the Shah's rule. The original sin, in common Iranian memory, was the 1953 American and British intelligence-backed coup against a popular democratically chosen nationalist leader, Mohammad Mossadegh, which succeeded in re-entrenching the power of the monarch. Mossadegh's name is not terribly common in Western circles. Israelis probably have no clue who he is, but Iranians remember. And they remember the reign of the Shah. The New York Review of Books recently republished a 1976 essay by an extremely prolific and respected Iranian writer, and an exile, Reza Barayani. Barayani noted that the Shah's father, Reza Khan, the current Pahlavi's grandfather, was a brutal ruler with Nazi tendencies. But it was under his son, the last Shah and modern-day Reza's father, that he and others were tortured using the most psychopathic means. Be grateful I'm not repeating them here, and have chosen some data points instead. In more than 20 years of the Shah's rule, he noted that 300,000 Iranians had been in and out of prison, and American-trained counterinsurgency troops and SAVAK, the regime's horrible secret police, killed between 4,000 and 6,000 opposition protesters, based on various reports. The Mossad, too, had a hand in coordinating with SAVAK, along with broader, covert, Israeli defense coordination with Iran under the Shah. Barayani also quoted an Amnesty International report from 1974-75 which found that Iran had the highest rate of death penalties in the world, no valid system of civilian courts and a history of torture which is beyond belief. This is a wretched legacy for Pahlavi today, not to mention for all foreign actors who supported the Shah. The optimistic view from a democratic perspective is that if Reza Pahlavi is installed in power, he will be nothing like his father, though he had been evasive, as to whether he disavows his father's rule. Perhaps democratic hopefuls for Iran hope he will follow the rather more inspirational model of Juan Carlos, the King of Spain who followed Francisco Franco and dismantled what the dictator had built, shepherding Spain to democracy. Israel should care about Iran's democracy. It is a fair question to ask why it's worth dredging up this awful history instead of embracing the future, come what may. Anything must be better than the cruel, fundamentalist and violent regime of the Islamic Republic. Does it matter how democratic Iran's short to middle-term future is? From Israel's perspective, Netanyahu doesn't care much for democracy these days anyway, and he hasn't prioritized it in Israel's foreign policy either. For years, Netanyahu has fortified Israel's foreign relations with some of the world's most undemocratic allies. As for Trump, it's not clear he even knows what democracy means. But while Israel and the US might be hurtling towards a post-revolution future for Iran come what may, they'd better remember the cost of backing horrible regimes. Barayani, it should be noted, apparently took the anything is better approach. The Writers Guild pen wrote that he was elated by the Islamic Revolution, given his suffering under the Shah, and returned to Iran, but was eventually forced to flee to Canada after he was put on the regime's hit list for demanding greater liberties. He lived and died as a dissident in exile. Apparently, people will never stop struggling until they are more free than they were. The point is not just to remember the gory details of one more repressive regime in history, but to remember the cycle of cruel rulers, sometimes foreign-backed, who go down in flames, to be replaced by equally bad ones. When one evil regime goes down, the next one blames its backers. Israel can cultivate and support that process, but until Iranians live in a freer society, dare one dream of democracy, no one should expect a kind disposition to those who coddle their oppressors, past or future.